This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
Hello, welcome to the Airbus Podcast, a podcast that is currently happening right now. This is a Patreon episode. Thank you so much. My name is Jamel.
I'm Peter.
My name is Mike. Jamel, I love that you started by being like, what should I say? And then a long pause. And then you're like, oh, I know. Hello.
Yeah, I think I forgot. Nigga, for real. I really don't know. I do too much with the intros.
No, I don't think so.
We love it.
It's a good time.
It'd be bad. Some of them are real bad, man.
Jamel, no. They're all good. Jamel,
you're doing a great job.
Hey, guys, all right. The way Benner's even looking at me is turning me off right now. Please don't do that.
That's so funny to hear you say that, Jamel, because I always think of you as someone who, the way that I perceive you, is someone who is not scared of, like, I don't know if it's failing or taking chances or going, I don't know, making choices. So.
Oh, extremely afraid of all of those things, bro. This shit is lies. Everything you've seen was parlor tricks, bro.
I hear that.
Quarantine just pulled back the facade, baby.
Yeah.
Once I forgot I was 32 years old, my whole shit has been
My God. Okay. We have been hiking the stairs in my neighborhood, and Jamel comes by, usually hand him a water bottle, which has just become our routine.
Yeah, we walk, and he gives me a water. I sit there for 20 minutes. I order something on Grubhub. I walk home.
That's it. One time, for a good 10 minutes, I had to convince Jamel that he was no longer 31 years old and hadn't been for over 8 months.
Yeah. I don't even know how that shit even began, bro. He was talking about graduation.
You were just dead set on being 31. I was like, Jamel, we both graduated in 06. I know for a fact we're the same age. We've talked about this hundreds of times.
And the difference between 31 and 32 is like, I mean, what the fuck are you even lying for?
Listen, to your credit, I have a hard time saying 32 because it is a very unforgettable age.
What is everyone's current age right now?
I'm currently 32. This is Zach Toscani, by the way. Comedy's very own.
I was going to get to the introduction, but yes. Welcome. Please welcome Zach Toscani. Great comic. You know him from Fade It. Now an online show.
Yeah.
But used to be one of the better LA shows when we could still do live comedy.
Yeah, I miss it. But I also, like, someone brought up the idea, and I don't know if they were being completely sincere or not, but they're like, you know, LA has a lot of parks and New York's already doing park shows. And I was like, I do not want to do a park show 0%. I wouldn't want to do a park show that someone else does. It's just like, and I can't say that for everybody. Just for me, I'm like, I do not feel like who gives a fuck about my stand-up?
Nigga, I was doing park shows when we was allowed to go outside. Nigga, I was doing fucking, I used to do, how am I blanking on the comedy crawl? Fucking,
Howard Kramer. Howard Kramer used to do the comedy crawl around Echo Park, which I never went to, but I heard was actually fun. It was fun because you had the choice to do it in a park, but now you have no choice but to do it in a park, and that adds a different layer of like esoteric terror.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason I'm very apprehensive towards it is not, it's just mostly because when I think I want to go to a park, you want to escape the noise, people or whatever, And then could you imagine if you're at a park just like reading a book and then stand up just starts happening near you? I would be so pissed. I would be so mad.
It does feel like it.
I think I can't start. I can't not think about people at the park being like, what the fuck?
I also think there's just something about stand up, restaurants, concerts, like whenever it returns, because at some point, whether it's 6 months or 6 years, it will return. Like, why cheapen how amazing that's going to be by trying to fucking get it in for any reason beforehand?
And what do you like building your TV set for fucking 8 months from now?
In front of some ducks.
Like, I just don't even know what premises you'd be trying out, because it's like you. I don't know. I mean, I get it. For some people, it might be like a great version of venting. Or,
you know, what's funny about when William Barr put me in Jewish Hollywood jail? That's like a good one for like 8 months from now.
I do love
the premise I've been toiling with.
Sitting at the park reading a book and then stand-up comedy happening is like exactly like what they made you do on like Last Comic Standing season 3. Do you remember when they like used to be like, part of being a comedian is making anyone laugh anywhere, anytime. So you have to go to a restaurant and do comedy for people just trying to eat their pizza. And you're just like, that is not at all what comedy is. Comedy happens in a very specific place at a very specific time for people that are ready for it.
Well, yeah, comedy's about learning that the hard way, because we've all, you know what I'm saying? Like, dog, I used to host a show in D.C. It was this place, 8th Street Country Club. And it was a bar. They had a little barcade vibe. And then upstairs, they had putt-putt. It was like an indoor putt-putt with like four or five holes you could do. And then there was a room connected to it off to the side where there was like a bar, you know what I'm saying? And they had an open mic. I was hosting the mic there on Sundays. But the PA system was connected to the mini golf. So like couples would walk by. And then I would be like, your date is still ruined, bitch.
They're just like, are they playing just a man's opinion on the radio?
Yeah. They'd just be hearing open mic. They'd be like at hole 8 hearing an open micer over the PA being like,
Yeah, just imagine trying to pretend to teach someone to putt while someone's telling the worst joke you ever heard.
Some comedy clubs do that, like they pipe it into the bathroom, and I kind of, it's like hit or miss. Sometimes I like it, because if I'm watching someone set and I go to pee, I don't lose. I'll like come back into the show and have a frame of reference for what's going on. But also, they never mic the audience too. So it just sounds like, it just makes you, it really breaks the wall more than just taking a piss would be, you know?
It's what comedy is now. It's just someone alone in a room.
Oh, exactly.
Oh, I miss it so
And someone
much.
Else viewing it while peeing and pretending not to be.
Oh, God.
You know, that is something I do enjoy about what you guys are doing with Fade It, where it's like, it's not typically just like someone doing a set directly in the camera, which all the Zoom shows I've seen have been very uncomfortable, because that just doesn't work for me. And people were like, say haha in the chat. And I was like, that doesn't, it's not the same.
Yeah.
But I like that you guys are just kind of hanging out and talking to each other.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it was not, it wasn't an action. It was more due to no one else wanting to do, no one wanted to be like, all right, are we producing an hour long show every week? No fucking way. and then, you know, it's honestly been Mike has been booking everyone. And then I don't think that he explicitly tells people that we're not asking them to do stand up. So we've had people come on and they're like, oh, have we started or is this the green room? We're like, no, this is just the show. We don't really it'd be funny if you don't want to. Yeah. But it's still tough. I don't, it does not scratch the itch that live comedy did, like, at all. It's fun to talk to friends, but in terms of like worrying about people watching it or curating it or like adding way more, I don't know, production or thought into it, I'm just like, it does not move me in that way, which sucks, I guess.
Let's start doing shows at laundromats, yo.
Man, I don't mind going back to like shitty open mics when everything's like back to Because that's, I guess we're all going to get knocked down a few pegs, right?
Oh, yeah. Straight back to Paladino's.
Well, I don't know. Didn't everybody leave? Like, didn't everybody move?
They'll be back.
I mean, I guess I'm not in LA right now, so.
Yeah, I mean, but I always feel like in Portland, there was always those comics where they're around for like 6 years steady, and then they get like an actual real girlfriend, and then they're like, oh, I don't need this shit anymore. I'm like actually getting love. So they disappear, and then if that relationship breaks up, they're like, guess who's back? I always love stand-up. And you're like, all right.
Guess who needs love again?
Yeah, exactly. Until I find someone good again. Yeah. We're back.
Well, speaking of being back, basketball is back. This is a podcast about basketball. Not about the current state of the live comedy scene.
This is a Portland Trailblazers podcast.
This is a pro Damian Lillard podcast.
And let me just, and I'm not amending anything I said on Sunday. I still think what Pat Beverly did was hilarious, and I loved it, but I've never not been on Dame's side for a second.
How? I still want to know. I still don't understand why Pat Beverly going Dame time is hilarious. It's like not very creative.
It's, but it worked. It's effective. The guy missed the two free throws and they lost the game. And he did it by being a tool. Effective dickery.
Yeah, you got to use the thing that, like, use the thing against him.
The funniest thing that ever happened, I used to kill people in high school. I used to roast the shit out of people in high school. The best joke that was ever used against me, I was lighting this guy up on a bus home from a track meet for 30 minutes. And he just turned to me and said, oh, yeah, well, you're fat. And you know what? It crushed. It crushed because I was fat.
Okay, but here's the thing. I would argue that that probably would not have crushed if you did not do a half hour of setup for that punchline.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay, fine.
Just like Dame Lillard has been dropping
nothing but buckets.
50-point setups nothing this entire buckets. Restart.
Yeah, that's true.
He's, you know, I'm not even, I love the NBA, but I'm not even a specific fan to any one franchise. Growing up in Cincinnati, no one's like, true. There's not an NBA town. It's mostly.
Yeah. The closest NBA team is the Kentucky Wildcats.
Yeah, exactly. And no one felt like affinity for a Cleveland team or Indianapolis or anything. So like I actually, when Damian Lillard got into the league, I was kind of like, oh God, this guy. But over the course of the last like 3 years, it's kind of undeniable how fucking good he is. And he seems like, he already seems like the guy 20 years from now that people are like, no one really talks about. Or like, why didn't he get the appreciation during his run? I don't know.
It feels a little bit, though, like right over the last couple of years, though, he's one of the rare cases where I think maybe NBA Twitter is a part of this. Like, we identify and kind of love him in the moment, saying that he's under, like, talking about how underappreciated he is has kind of allowed us to appreciate him. And the fact that he just keeps on like stepping up in huge moments where we're all just like completely online all the time. Like, he doesn't have to win a championship. Like, people will be replaying him shooting over Paul George from half court to send them home forever.
That's Iverson. Yeah. That's Taylor stepping Parson. Over Tyronn Lue level.
Yeah. He's now immortal. Like, he, and he also just wills his team and shoots like an insane person. And it's incredible.
He called Skip Bayless a bitch and then went out and dropped 60. And then he went on Adidas and dropped the price of his shoe to $60.
Oh, yeah. Did you see that, Zach? Did you take advantage and get a pair of sneakers?
I did not get a pair. Dame shoes are not as I've aged, it's harder for me to wear straight up like really basketball shoes.
Nah, I got you.
And Dame kind of fall under that, but Ian has a fuck ton of them. So I see some that I'm like, oh, like there was some version of like a bomber colorway, like a World War II bomber colorway. I don't know. It might be like two versions ago or something. But at the time I was like, oh, that I would never wear that. And over time I'm like, that is actually pretty fucking cool.
Nice. He's got the goddamn Tuskegee Airmen joints.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Dame, yeah, as we're talking about this, Dame scored 61 and 51 in the last two games. The Blazers have officially taken like sole possession of the eighth seed in the West right now.
I remember what I was going to say, Benner, to cut you off. Yeah. This has all happened since all of this went down. Since this went down, all they've been doing is continue to win. Paul George apparently texted him to apologize. They're playing Dame's album while the Clippers are warming up tonight. So I feel like the jury has come back in on the right side of this, and that it's just mostly just been the Clippers, like, even if it's just to be cool, like, they're walking back with like their tail between their legs, and Dame's just been putting up over 100 points,
which is interesting that they did that and they didn't even play again. It's like he beat another team so bad that the Clippers said sorry.
That is true. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it.
That is awesome. And now, you know, he's reached a point where now on Twitter I see other teams like photoshopping their jersey onto him. And I'm like, I think that's also part of the coronation. Is team being like, we got to trade for Dame. We got to get Dame.
Lakers Twitter has been doing it to Dame for like, I think all this entire season. But I think
for years.
The past couple days, like, it has bled into many other, like, Heat. The Heat have been photoshopping him. I saw a Detroit one.
Okay, buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So when I first moved to LA, I stayed with family and my cousin and her husband. And her husband does PR for Tom Gores, the owner of the Pistons. So the 6 months that I was living there, he would show me emails between Stan and the owner, and they were, man, it was fucking great.
What kind of PR do you have to do when you're the owner? Like, were things that bad?
I don't know, man. This dude's a billionaire. His brother's a billionaire. He has like all these other businesses. So I think it's not strictly just Pistons, but it's like anytime he has to go make a statement or like, I don't know, who knows?
Rich people just want like PR people so they never have to think about what they have to say.
Exactly.
I was just imagining.
This guy listens, he tells me and whatever.
Yeah,
I just was imagining, like, Stan Van Gundy gets an email like, hey, during the timeouts, don't forget to mention that we have the pretzel nacho cheese crust on our hot and readies now. Make sure you let the team know that.
I think Stan Van Gundy probably was already letting the team know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, watch me eat this in the huddle.
We're gonna shout out pretzel wall.
Shout out to Stan Van Gundy for like joining Twitter and becoming like a leftist icon immediately.
Yeah, I love that dude.
That is very much like the probably I would say the wokest position is NBA coach. It feels like.
Oh yeah. Oh.
It feels
like
NBA coach is very much just like, I don't know.
They made a Black Lives Matter reel.
Yeah.
Well, the coaches hold
like
hands
they're all very outspoken and like seemingly the most knowledgeable, at least in terms of like coaches in other sports. I would never expect a baseball manager to give like a very well balanced, thought out point.
Does feel like, and they feel all like NBA coaches jazz. live more like in the actual world compared to NFL and MLB. Coaches and managers who are just like indoctrinated in their sport for their entire lives, 24/7, 365.
Right.
Maybe that's just bullshit, but that's at least what it feels like.
No, I mean, fuck, man. I'm a tennis fan, so it's just like just a mountain of people who don't care in that industry about anything, which I guess is not surprising, but it's still just like, oh, wow. They won't even do basic shit, you know? Like, a lot of tournaments have not, they won't even say Black Lives Matter or anything. It's like, oh, you won't even do, like, the boilerplate, just fucking put it out there.
Come on, tennis.
All right, no one wants to hear this, but I'm going to ask it anyways, because I've played a lot of tennis. Like, what the fuck happened to U.S. men's tennis?
Well, when like, James Blake got arrested.
That was tough. Yeah. Dude, James Blake's had it rough. He got speared like Goldberg on the fucking sidewalk of his hotel in New York City.
On the BQE.
And this is like his last year playing, or I think he was retired. So it's like, dude's been famous.
And like only in New York. You should know who he is specifically in New York.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, that's a good question. I just feel like it's a country club sport, and like, you know, most of the people that I know that play, Cincinnati's like kind of a big tennis town. It's all because it's like there's parochial Catholic schools, and so it's like people are paying $3,000-$4,000 for a yearly membership to play tennis all year. And I was never that. Most people aren't really that. And there doesn't seem to be anything outside of basically just going into a club and then buying a coach. It's like super expensive. I mean, it's all like anything. It's an individual sport. So yeah, I don't know. Sense. I wish I knew.
Too much overhead. I think it was Andy Roddick's fault. I think once Andy Roddick got SNL,
that was it.
It kind of fucking ruined everything.
I mean, for me,
there's some good U.S. players. Tiafoe, your boy.
That is my boy. He had like one big. What tournament did he really get his shit off? It was like Australia.
Yeah,
a couple
we
years
watched
ago?
That match at your house because it was like won the first two sets and then he started cramping. And he lost the last two sets, and then he won the set.
Yeah,
five sets is still insane to me. Like, five sets is just fucking nuts.
They're doing it at the U.S. Open, and it's like none of these players have had time to play five sets, so they're just immediately like, all right, you might have a seven-hour-long match.
But, like,
that's what I call jerking off. Five sets. I'm playing five. Playing five sets.
Really, like, there's really nothing you can't accomplish in three sets. Like,
exactly.
If you're down, like, if you're down 2-1 after three sets, like, fuck you if you need five sets to come back. Like, you were down 2-1. Who cares? Like, that was already 90 minutes.
Hey, Peter. Hey, wait a minute. Hey, both of y'all, chill out with that shit, man. Didn't you get the... Hey, that's why I said that I was beating my dick. You guys are talking about tennis all serious? Cool out
Thank
with
you.
That.
Still beat your dick in five sets.
I think I didn't talk for like 7 minutes there. I don't.
Yeah, I was just looking.
This is a podcast about basketball.
Yeah,
and tennis.
I was
sometimes.
In though. I love it. I love it. I love tennis. I'm with you. I did watch the Alpha. I bought too many wings for that.
I do not know anything about tennis at all, other than I know like I know the Williams sisters and I know Naomi Osaka and I, but I know them as like personalities. I don't know anything about their tennis games.
Right.
How's that pizza?
I'm actually putting down this shakaroni right now.
Yeah, don't get ahead of the game, guys. We'll get to that.
Sorry.